and welcome back to the Impact Lab podcast. I'm absolutely delighted to have with me today legend that is Cameron Tope. He is a client, but also just one of the smartest people I've had the pleasure of talking to over the past few years. And he's got a lot of insights for you guys. So I hope you all enjoy it. Cameron, how are you doing, mate?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Very, very well. Thank you. So, Cameron, before we start, we're going to do the reverse Turing test. So what is the name of your former dog?
Maru.
Is that right?
That is correct, yeah.
Maru. Cameron, it's so nice to have you here. For those who don't know you, maybe just give a quick introduction of yourself.
So I'm Cameron, the CEO and founder of Ruya. So we're a company that does video telematics, mostly in the Middle East and also in the insurance industry in the UK. My background was as an actuary, so I worked in insurance for probably about 8-9 years before I started the company, and I like running, going to the gym, hanging out with my friends, and you know, having a cold beer or whatever. That's pretty much it, I think.
So for those people who don't know, what is an actuary?
That's a great question. An actuary is someone that basically tries to predict the future using the past, and mostly doing that around financial risk for insurance companies and pensions. So what I was specifically doing was calculating the sort of expected cost of an insurance for an insurance company of you know, what their claims is going to be if, you know, we sell this policy to someone, and then how you would price that policy based on lots of different information about the risk they're underwriting.
A lot of statistical analysis, a lot of mathematics there. That's where the big brain comes from.
Yeah, exactly. Fun.
What skills from your life as an actuary do you still use today?
Basically, I'd say a lot of the kind of analysis, especially understanding kind of business problems in doing sort of calculation of. I'll give an example, right? We look at the risk for insurance companies of people's driving behavior. How we do that is by using kind of visual data, using the same kind of stuff that they're already using as well with GPS accelerometer. But like adding that visual data in is kind of a new thing from a risk analytics point of view. So I guess from my background, I obviously have some experience in doing this and like an understanding of how we would approach it from a modeling point of view. And in that modeling, I'm trying to explain it in a simple way.
I got it. Basically, the modeling skills, the statistical analysis, in order to sort of help try and predict outcomes, yeah?
Yeah, and that's also useful in kind of other areas. You know, like even going into the computer vision side, it was not something I had experience in before starting the company. But then, you know, in actually building our kind of first set of computer vision models and stuff before we got the team and the team here to do that, I think a lot of the skills are very transferable. So understanding how to do statistical analysis, do machine learning kind of problems in an insurance context, you know, does transfer well into kind of other areas as well. So
a lot of people sort of say, oh, there's so much that you learn from working at a startup. I'm one of those people as well. I say, you know, you learn a lot of critical skills working in a startup. But I kind of want to like reverse the question on you, because like we're similar in the fact that we both worked in the corporate world and the startup world. So, you know, because you worked at Willis Towers Watson. So what did corporate life teach you that a startup never really will?
I think one of the biggest things, especially I've been noticing recently, is how to navigate dealing with big companies as customers. So having that kind of understanding of what the process that a big company goes through when you want to sell to them. So, you know, how do you approach a procurement department? How do you understand what are all the different people that need to sign something off? I think when you've kind of been on the other side of it, you understand, okay, like, I know it's not just going to happen, you know, in 1 month or something, and it's going to be one guy that needs to sign it off. I'm going to need to go through like 20 different people and go through several committees and so on and so forth before anything kind of anything lands. I think that was like a big, quite a helpful thing in just understanding what you're about to go through rather than being sort of naive to the situation.
Yeah, I think I agree. Certainly, like, corporate life teaches you patience. That's for sure. But in the same time, I think a lot of people go into startups from that corporate world with almost too much patience. They don't have that sense of urgency that you need to sort of grow a startup. So how did you make that transition? Was that an easy transition for you?
I'd say it wasn't too difficult. I had sort of at least had some experience of working in startups before I started the company. So, you know, I had a mix of experience. And in even, you know, while working, say, for example, with Munich Re, you know, our job there was, you know, helping to launch startups. So we had some, you know, I had some tangential involvement with the startups and also some direct involvement working a startup before I started the company myself. So you kind of have an understanding of what the difference in pace is like, you know, what some of the problems that you're likely to encounter. It's obviously not the same still. Like, until you're running the company, like, you don't really feel the same sort of pain. But for sure, you know, I wasn't going into it completely cold. And saying that, there's definitely people, you know, that are not suited for doing startup coming from the corporate world. I think, you know, that's something that's really difficult, especially when you're hiring, to make sure that that adjustment from going to corporate to startup is really something that they can handle and that they want, I think.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's like being a doctor. You've got to really, really want it to start that process.
For sure.
If you don't want it. But obviously you did. And like, at what point in your career did you know, do you know what, I really want my own business?
I mean, so I guess before starting Ruya, I was also kind of doing, you know, consulting business and, you know, it was, you know, some contracting stuff and some big consulting projects and things. And but for me, that was kind of not really. It's not the same as like a proper startup, right? It's more like a lifestyle business, a great lifestyle business. I think, you know, from there, I got to a point where maybe financially I was quite stable, and I'd already had this idea of starting a company for a while. And I think it was maybe at that point where I'm like, you know, I had this big project that was winding down, and it just felt like, okay, I've got some cash in the bank. Like, I'm not wanting for anything really. I don't need to work for a while. Now's a good time to just go and do this. If I'm ever going to do it, now is probably the time. So I did, yeah.
And like, obviously you started, you know, having that financial base, really, it really helps kind of like, but the fear doesn't go away. I realized, is that even if you have that financial base, when you start your business and you start burning through cash, that fear of like, running out of cash never really disappears. It's always there. But for people who don't know, what is Ru'ya? Obviously, Ru'ya means vision in Arabic. What is the business?
So Ru'ya is a computer vision-based telematics business. So we basically help fleet managers to manage the risk of their drivers. So help them sort of reduce risky driving behaviors, help them sort of from an operational point of view to become more efficient and have better insight sort of overall into how they manage their fleet. So we've kind of started off, we started off from the point of view of the insurance and trying to understand like how we can better underwrite and price insurance. And then that sort of morphed into what the product is today. And so, you know, our main approach is really looking at how we analyze people's driving behavior from video footage. So you've got a dash cam, basically that fits into the vehicle with a road facing camera, a driver facing camera, and then monitoring people's driving behavior to basically help them become better drivers. And then, you know, from that same data set, can we better analyze people's driving behavior for the sort of underwriting pricing from insurance point of view? And then, you know, that sort of develops out into a full platform that can kind of help with a bunch of different areas. And, you know, I think going forward, we're really looking to sort of embed ourselves more deeply into the operation of the fleets and kind of help them to become more efficient and just have a better understanding of, you know, what it is that they're trying to do and how they can optimize that.
It's such a nice genesis, like that story. You start as an actuary, you're assessing risk, you're predicting outcomes, and then so you have a bit of time as a consultant, then you start your business, which is actually managing those risk areas before they become risks, using obviously the dash cam and AI and all of those things. I've seen the platform, and obviously, you know, you're a client at Kush Digital, and so we get to see the amazing work that you guys do. I think I asked you this on the first time we ever spoke. Why Saudi?
It's a great question. I think Saudi Arabia as a country is really developing in a very fast way, right? I'd say, you know, from an operational point of view, you know, they're probably a little bit behind where say the US, the UK are. But I think that creates a big opportunity. And I think there's a real drive, you know, both from the corporate world and from the government to really push towards being kind of the best in the world, right? The sort of vision 2030 is I think deeply sort of embedded in everyone's mind. And that creates a big opportunity for people like us, I was very lucky, obviously, to have a good friend in Rakan and being able to help set up the business in Saudi Arabia. It's a market that I think is going to leapfrog other parts of the world. We want to be the forefront of that.
I agree totally. It is absolutely leapfrogging the rest of the world. I think that people will be surprised where it is by the time the World Cup comes around. But I think what I always found really interesting in terms of Ru'ya's entry into Saudi Arabia is that it's almost the perfect market, because apart from the fact that it's ambitious, apart from the fact that it's very corporate driven, apart from all of those things, it's a driver's country. People drive everywhere. And there is like long distances involved in driving in Saudi Arabia. So how did you have to modify the Ru'ya platform to adapt to sort of the different drive, not necessarily driving behaviors, although I'm sure they are different, but the different driving modality, the distances involved in driving, in Saudi Arabia?
Yeah, I think there's obviously some aspects that we needed to adjust for. I think a lot of it is very transferable worldwide. But you know, there's obviously a difference in, I think, risk appetite of drivers and risk appetite of fleet managers in terms of people's driving behavior compared to, say, the UK, where I think, you know, obviously in the UK, we've got some of the safest roads in the world, right? The driving behaviors are, say, a bit more relaxed in the Middle East. And so we've got to adjust to that. You know, there's the kind of the obvious stuff, like the road signs are often different language. And, you know, we have to train our computer vision models to be able to recognize that. But yeah, you know, there is definitely different behaviors. I mean, from a market perspective as well, you know, the types of things that people want to look into are not necessarily the same. So there's, you know, the cost of, say, insurance in Saudi Arabia is considerably less than it is in the UK. And so it's not as as primary a focus. And so, you know, I think the operational aspect becomes somewhat more important here in Saudi. And yeah, I think, you know, there's just generally different needs of different people. You know, the integration from, you know, like third party providers, doing the regulation, all this kind of stuff needs to be accounted for when going into any different countries. So,
you've been to Saudi a few times. What do you think of the city itself?
Riyadh.
Yeah, I really love Riyadh. Yeah, it's a great place. I spend probably half of my time in Riyadh these days. It's, you know, I guess I'm slowly moving over there, let's say. Just trying to close out some things on a personal perspective here in the UK. And then, you know, we'll be spending quite a lot of time there. So.
Yeah, I love Riyadh as a city. It's like one of those, it's nothing at all like I expected because it's so vast. Like just geographically, it's really, really big. And then as soon as you get out of the center, it's all two-story buildings. Like there's no... You're very rare to see like high rise buildings outside of the center, but it's such a great lifestyle. I spent the first 3 months of this year there and nearly didn't come back. But then the heat started to kick in, so I was like, "Yeah, okay."
Yeah, that's something definitely hard to get used to. Is the also like the dry weather? You know, your lips start to crack up a bit if you don't stay hydrated. But no, it's great. I mean, there's lots of good restaurants. There's lots of stuff to do. And, you know, it's constantly changing. And, you know, the infrastructure there is really good as well. I think just like, even though it's huge, like to get a taxi from, you know, one end to the other doesn't take that long. It's like in London, it will take you a long, long time to get anywhere just because the road infrastructure is very old.
Yeah, and it's not that expensive as well. That's the other thing. It's not like Dubai. People always make the comparison between Riyadh and Dubai, and they're just totally, totally different cities. They are chalk and cheese in terms of the cities themselves. I want to take you back through some of the early pain points of starting with Ruya. So what's like some of the challenges that you came across that nobody warned you about when you were starting your own business?
I think probably early on, the one thing that not many people talk about is maybe the sort of the loneliness and the lows of like trying to start a business. Like it's not always fun and games. And I think, you know, early on when you're trying to sort of make that breakthrough and you're on your own, I think it can be really quite challenging, and it's just not very fun sometimes. And I think you really have to be very committed to kind of getting through that. You know, I think everyone when they start is very enthusiastic. I think, you know, I have a lot of friends who also started their own businesses, and you know, you give them a year and a half, and it's just like, chalk and cheese, right? How the people's mindset on the whole thing. I think you can get very dejected, and a lot of people get to a point where they give up because it's just a lot harder than people think it's going to be.
It's a lonely.
If you push through, then hopefully, hopefully it can get you somewhere.
Yeah, like it is. It's a lonely job. And I'm always reminded of this Harvard study that is the predictor of successful entrepreneurs. And the biggest predictor isn't IQ or which school they went to or any of it or access to funding. It's grit, their ability to stick through the pain, to absorb the pain. And I think that's like, if you ask any founder, they'll say the same thing. Yeah, you just got to be able to stick it out, get through the painful bits, because it does get a bit easier eventually.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, you've gone from being like a, let's say, a technical expert to being a founder. Did you find that transition particularly hard?
Not really. I mean, I think there's things now, especially as the team's getting bigger, that I have to learn a lot more. You know, I guess in my previous work, I'd obviously been a manager. I'd been, exposed to a lot of different things, thankfully, that have helped me in starting the company and having, another company already, just even in terms of like, okay, doing the accounting, the admin, the, filing stuff. It's like things that you kind of learn that you have to do. So like from that point of view, I was kind of okay from the point of view of like, okay, I need to go and ask people for money. I need to go and do like all these things and like manage my time from different areas. I felt was a bit more challenging. And then this sort of period now where, okay, it's like, yeah, I managed teams in the past, but they weren't like huge teams. Whereas obviously now we've got a pretty sizable headcount, and kind of trying to make sure that everything is sort of in harmony is a different kind of challenge. So that's a big learning point for me at the moment, I think.
I feel like you've never really done business until you felt the fear of payroll. Until you felt the fear of, am I going to meet payroll?
That is so true. Yeah.
Listen, you used to. Your job was to price risk. That's literally like your job, what you used to do. So how does that impact your relationship with risk in your life, not just in business?
I'm not sure that, like, I mean, I think it kind of opens your eyes a little bit to the risk that you're taking. I'm not sure that the appetite for risk is necessarily different. So, I've taken a fairly big risk from a, financial point of view, opportunity cost point of view in starting the business in the first place. How that goes forward in terms of like approaching the decisions we make as a company. I think in general, we have, some fairly high risk tolerance. But I think I probably go into it reasonably open-minded and as to what the risks actually are. I think that's probably the difference. Is I think compared to say other founders I know, I'm probably more of a realist than an optimist or pessimist.
I guess probably that's how it, because you're pricing risk for a living. Maybe the outcome of that is that it makes you just more realistic. You really you understand like there is risk in everything that you do. And that, you just have to, some risks are acceptable and some aren't. Maybe that's the output I get. Because you've been it for so long, it may be difficult to kind of look back at a life where you didn't assess risks. I'm quite sure that if we're able to pick your brain apart and just look at someone like me, your assessment of risks would almost be innate you'd probably innately assess, yeah, there's probably something here that I can do and not do. And that is probably true. I mean, you didn't fail in any startup, right? Before Roya, Roya was your first, apart from the consultancy, did you try any startups before that?
I didn't, no, I didn't start another business myself. I mean, I was obviously part of another company, and as far as I'm aware, they still exist. So no, I've not kind of gone through that thing either on my own or with someone else where the company's, you know, actually failed.
So that's really, really unusual. Yeah. So like, it's so unusual to have a founder that's basically hit the bullseye on the first attempt. And that makes me think that, you know, there is something in your ability to understand this risks around us. Because basically, as founders, what are we? We're just professional decision makers. We make 100 decisions a day, and we hope that 60 of them are right. And, you know, for the other 40 don't screw up the company totally. But I think that maybe that's the thing. You've got this innate ability to assess risks on every decision that you aren't even consciously aware of, which is obviously a superpower that I wish I had, and every founder wishes they had too. Look, I don't want to keep you too long, so a couple more questions. Before you started out with your own business, like, what was one belief that you had that ended up being just not true?
That is a tough question. I think probably the one thing was, the ability to raise money being easy. I think there's a lot of, say, talk about, okay, there's a lot, you know, a lot of companies with or funds with dry powder. There's a lot of, you know, companies raising money. It's going to be easy. And I guess some people kind of tell you this, but probably haven't been through it themselves. And then you go through that and you're like, oh, this is a lot harder than I thought it was going to be. You know, I feel like there's people I've met who have great businesses, who very much struggle to raise money. And there's people that I think have got terrible businesses that have seemed to quite easily raise money. And, you know, and there's obviously the inevitable, it didn't work out. I think that's like a big one. I'm not sure, you know, I probably going back to like my personality, I feel like I'm not, I felt like I was pretty realistic about most things coming into this. And so I'm not sure that there was that much that surprised me. Obviously when I started the company, it was like a couple of weeks before COVID lockdown. So that was something that kind of, you know, threw things off a little bit. But, you know, otherwise, I kind of had a general expectation of how it might go. And, it's maybe a bit more difficult than I would have thought. But it's not been too outside of my prior expectations.
If it was easy, it wouldn't have been fun, I guess. Like, if it's, that's the point. Yeah. I mean, I'm always surprised at how people think that raising money, they just put it as like a slide or a bullet point in a slide. Yeah, we're gonna raise £4 million, and you're like, are you really? Because that's not how it works. But okay, if that's what you think. Last couple of questions, Cameron. So, what is like your long-term vision for Roya?
So, I think we really want to be kind of the operating system for fleet managers. You know, we want them to come to us to basically understand everything about their operation, and really for us to be, you know, kind of like the, you know, the co-pilot type thing for fleet managers. Maybe it's a bit of a trendy thing now with all your sort of AI chatbots and everything. you know, people kind of using that for their everyday work. Well, I guess we want to be sort of like that, but maybe a bit more focused in our scope for fleet managers to be able to help them kind of be, you know, operationally efficient, safe, and I guess have, you know, real transparency around kind of what's going on in their fleets.
I love that, to be the operating system for fleet managers. That's I think that's a great vision to have. And one of the things I love about Ruya is that your deployment of your model, your AI model, is super focused and super targeted, and it really does impact businesses and fleets, and it really does improve safety. It's not the kind of stuff that you just you read on the label and you think, yeah, okay. But it actually does. I've seen the data. I can see the case studies. And I see that you guys, you know, you're saving companies money, but you're ultimately, you're saving lives too. And that's like, it's such a lofty goal that so few companies achieve. And I can't wait to see your continued growth, because it's been incredible so far. And I'm going to ask one last curveball question. I was like ending on a curveball. Okay. So you had a job where you never relied on instinct, right? Your job was, the numbers told you the answer. But what is one decision that you've taken at Ruya that you had to make with no data?
I mean, I think early on, almost everything is done without data. I think even the whole premise of the business itself, right? So this thinking around, the original idea, this thinking around how do we analyze people's driving behavior to, you know, better price and underwrite risk, I think came about more from a theory of like, well, you know, we've got this new technology around, say, self-driving cars, and can we leverage that for doing the same thing? It's going into it, it's obviously not proven. It's basically a theory, like, will this actually work or not? I'm not sure. And, you know, we're kind of at the point now where it's like, yes, it does work. But, you know, for a long time without the data, we don't know the answer to it. So I think the whole premise of the company was really based around, just a theory, which we didn't have any data for. So, you got to hope that it is going to make an improvement. Otherwise, you don't have much of a company.
You got to risk it for a biscuit when it comes to the building a business. Cameron, it's been so awesome talking to you. I really appreciate your time. The guys, the people who listen to the podcast, they're gonna get a lot from your insight. So the links to Ruya and Cameron's LinkedIn will be in the show notes, as well as links to the Impact Lab website, impactlab.store. We've got a new free course on there at the moment, the Prompt Monkey Problem. Don't be a prompt monkey. Learn marketing, and then, you know, use that foundational knowledge to work with AI to help you build marketing campaigns that actually work. It's a totally free course. Just go on the website, do it. Don't be a prompt monkey. You are going to ruin your career if you do. Cameron, thank you so much for your time, and I can't wait to talk to you.
It's a pleasure.
Thanks. Thank you for listening to the podcast. Before you go, I just want 30 more seconds of your time. Firstly, thank you for taking the time to listen to the podcast. If you enjoyed it, please do take a moment to leave us a review. It really helps getting exposure to the podcast for other people. We only do this stuff for you, so please do take a moment to leave a review. If you are interested in our digital marketing agency, Cush Digital, you can go to cush.digital and hit the contact form and we'll get right back to you. The Impact Lab has a free course on the website called the Prompt Monkey Problem. So if you think that you are in that category of people who are using AI too much and not necessarily building foundational skills or foundational knowledge, go to the impactlab.store and you can sign up for the course entirely free, no catch, no credit card, nothing. Just jump in, do the course, get your certificate, and then start building your own foundational knowledge in marketing. Thank you very much for your time, and we look forward to seeing you at the next episode.